Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. A fantastic Royal Rumble from WWE with all sorts of highlights in it. Interesting offering of AEW Dynamite this week where Samoa Joe regained his TNT championship. And a lot of other stuff in between with this WWE stock call. But Les, first, unfortunately, we have to start with the passing of Lanny Poffo.
Yeah, we do. Lanny was a really nice guy. You know, my first time ever on television was, I had two matches, but one was against his dad, Angelo, who also, I remember watching when he came out of the Navy and broke in. And then when Angelo and Dorothy, his wife, they went trying to get the kids' experience, they sold her home in Donners Grove, Illinois, and basically he retired from teaching school and started working with his background in the territories. And so anyway, they came into the Carolinas in the early 70s to get Randy and Lanny some experience there, you know. And last time I saw Lanny was at the Charlotte Fan Fest, the last one that Greg Price ran. And we talked for a while. And someone was saying to him, do you know this guy? And Lanny said, yes. And Les was so nice to my brother and I when we were just coming up. And that was the last chance we had to spend any time together. But really a nice guy. Poetic, yes, I'm sure, you know. And actually, he was a talented worker. Just, you know, he was in the shadow of one of the top guys of that era, you know. So, and to be honest with you, you know, a lot of people were, but yeah, Lanny was a good guy. And, you know, he had moved to South America.
I was not aware of that.
Yes. Yes. He was sent putting pictures up on Facebook. Damn it. I'm having a senior moment. Which one of the countries, but yeah. Yeah. He was down there and, you know, he put up pictures of different restaurants and different tourist sites, you know, that he was visiting, and always with a pretty girl. And I know I'd put a post. I said, did you move down there for the tax break or for the women? He said, probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
But, you know, now I don't know. Lanny, I don't think, ever married. Randy, of course, did. They didn't have children. So... And I don't know if that Angelo and his wife ever had any more children. So with Lanny gone, that pretty much the Poffo family that I knew, Angelo and his wife and the boys, is gone.
Mm. God, I didn't even think
yeah,
about
so
it like that.
If there, yeah. Yeah, if there is any family out there, we certainly want to send out our deepest sincere thanks for all that these guys have given us in the business over the years. And send our prayers and well wishes along to their friends, and if there is family out there, to them, obviously. So another good one gone, man. And actually, he wasn't that old either.
No, not at all. I'd be interested to find out what exactly went into what happened with him, because as you pointed out, yeah, still listen, the older you get, the younger numbers sound, right? But
yeah,
still too young to be gone. You know,
yes.
So
yeah, absolutely.
A lot more to get into on this edition of Wrestling Weekly. Before we get into some of that conference call in the Royal Rumble, though, in WWE, Les, we spoke last week regarding some stuff Dax has been saying on his podcast in recent weeks. We had a comment on the board about it, and the gentleman came back to the board in our thread from last week to say some nice things about you.
Wow. Yes. And I didn't get to read them. For those who don't know, I don't go on the board any longer. I went on when I first started doing this podcast with Doc Young, God knows how many years ago that was. And it wasn't that somebody didn't agree with me. It was some idiot trolling and just ripped. So I went on the air. I don't type that fast, but I can talk that fast. Went off, and Doc said, the best thing, you don't go on the board. So I stopped going on the board, but I want to say this, you know, the guy that probably my cut and paste guy, but you know, he'll tell me this was mentioned on the board regard to you or this your show or something. So, but I'm humbled by this. You know, obviously, for over the 62 plus years that I've been at this in one capacity or another, the idea is to impart information to the fans and to entertain them. And I don't know that you ever think what kind of lasting impression you make. And, you know, it's like when Mike Mooneyham says he remembers a match that Ronnie Garvin and I had in the 70s in Charleston, South Carolina, that was just technically so good that he hasn't forgotten it. That amazes me. But, you know, you go in that ring and you realize I'm out here to bust my hump and entertain these people and get the job done and hopefully draw people to come back the next time we're in this town or this venue. And, but you don't think past that. But when you hear that someone remembers something you did 30 years ago or 40 years ago, man, that's humbling. And you realize what an impression, you know, you actually have on the people that watch what you do. But with this gentleman, it was, you know, and I don't know how many, if he's listened to these podcasts forever and ever since Doc and I started, or he's been to seminars or what, but a lot of my opinions about how things should be done in the wrestling business, he cites them, right?
Yes, indeed. A lot of things that he's picked up from listening to you on this podcast that influences the way he watches the business now and actually talks to some local promoters and or wrestlers about, like, hey, man, why are you doing this? You should be doing that. You know, if particularly for the promoting end, you know, the local independent and what have you.
Right.
So, yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, God bless you, whoever you are. I don't know your name, but thank you for paying attention and thank you for caring and remembering and imparting it to others as well. But I did want to mention that. And again, like I say, it's humbling, but it's great to know that, you know, what you're trying to pass along is actually sinking in somewhere anyway. So whoever you are, sir, thank you again so much. And I appreciate you paying attention and passing along that information.
This has nothing to do with anything, but you talking about Mike Mooneyham remembering a match with you and Ron Garvin in South Carolina, just it popped into my head again. Charlotte Flair was on the Today Show on NBC last week on the third hour. One of the hosts, Craig Melvin, surprised me. I mean, I knew he was from South Carolina. They talk about it often, and, you know, they'll give him a hard time about his high school pictures, or he'll talk about growing up in South Carolina.
Right.
But with Charlotte there, he just started talking about the National Wrestling Alliance and how many times his family went to go see Charlotte's dad at County Hall.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's great. Yeah. County Hall. Yes. Friday nights in Charleston. Tuesday nights in Columbia Township Auditorium. Yeah, those were the every week towns, and of course Spartanburg, Greenville, as well, and yeah, but the good old days, absolutely.
Well, the guy who took the business out of the smoke filled arenas, Les, was part of the discussion on this week's WWE Investors Call. He was not apparently part of it, as far as I saw, but he was certainly referenced quite a bit, obviously, with Vince McMahon not only back in the building, but working on the possibility of a potential sale and or television deal, should it go that route instead of selling the company. One of the things was brought up by the shareholders is something that we have been discussing here over the last few weeks since Vince maneuvered his way back into the company and now once again is head of the board here. And that is whether or not he might be looking for a buyer who would allow him to remain in power. Well, that question was asked directly to Nick Khan, and he was asked, if he could tell investors with certainty that Vince would be willing to end his involvement with WWE following a sale if it gives the shareholders the most value. And Khan immediately said, and I quote, "Yes, without question." And then he went further. He's declared it to the board. He's declared it to us in management. It's all about shareholder value. He's obviously a shareholder, so it's not about what role he'll have. It's about maximizing that value opportunity. So now it's out there.
Wow. You know what? I hope that that's true. You know, I truly do. But as I've said, Vince is not going to work for anyone else at this point, and nor should he have to. Do I agree with everything he's done in his career? Absolutely not. I don't agree with everything my father did during our long relationship either, but that doesn't mean that he didn't do anything good. But yeah, I mean, Vince has earned a right, you know, to have some say so in all this. But yeah, it makes sense. He's coming out of this financially benefiting more than anybody else because he's the biggest stockholder. So yeah, it makes sense that. And what we would probably do, we're not talking about a few thousand dollars here. We'd probably be talking about several million. So, yeah, I think that at this point he would probably take that ride and say, yeah, okay, Horn have to step aside. Don't you think so? I mean, if he were Levesque's age, I'd say probably not. But now I would think, you know, yeah, he would probably, I would say that that's probably the case. But I would say while he's there, God, I can't believe his fingers aren't in everything.
Yeah, I can't either, to be completely honest with you. But I was tickled by some of the comments from Paul Levesque on the call about how much he's enjoying having his father-in-law back, Les. I don't, maybe he means it. I have no idea. But I read this and I'm just like, yeah. I bet you do.
Like I said to you before we start recording, why was this news? What did anyone expect Paul to say? I hate my son-in-law, and I wish that old bastard to get out of here. Even if he thought that, he would just say it, for God's sakes. But yeah, he's of course he's taking the company line, and of course that's, I mean, it makes good sense. You and I can sit here and rap on somebody that we don't like, and doesn't cost us a thing, probably maybe 10 cents or a dollar and a half, but in Paul's situation it could cost him millions. So yeah, I'd say walk softly and carry a big stick.
Hey, if we haven't seen enough of him over the last 25 years to know that he's too smart to get in his own way, so
yes.
There was one thing in the notes I sent you before we got together today regarding really what was a banner quarter for WWE and really a banner year. If you look at the year-over-year numbers, they've increased by just about every metric. No need to go into all of that stuff here. There are folks who do that far better. But there was one particular stat I wanted to point out, Les, before we get into some of the stuff from the Royal Rumble and a question I have for you regarding that excellent, sure, excellent angle in the main event. With the total ticket live events, basically, is where I'm trying to go. In terms of 2021... and 2022, basically, you know, since coming back after the pandemic and looking at these attendance figures, you're talking about, you know, in 2021, an average of 6,900 people in the building at these house shows, 6,100 plus so far in as far as their tally was for 2022. And yeah, that's a little down from the previous year, but obviously there was a little bit having to do with being so glad to be back out and about and stuff that there were going to be some more folks, I think, naturally, once house shows and other things were available again to crowds. But I wanted to make sure I made mention of that because before the pandemic, you and I were quite often pointing out the dwindling house show attendance, which in, you know, some weekends was under 3,000 for all three shows they were doing. And to go from that to this, you know, pandemic absence makes the heart grow fonder notwithstanding, these are damn impressive numbers compared to where they were a few years ago.
Yeah. Yes, they certainly are. You're absolutely right. And of course, I think it took a while for everybody to dig out from under the pandemic with this, you know, with a suspension of public, a lot of public stuff and, you know, that whole thing. So, yes, it has come a long way. And yes, their numbers are better. And of course, but you know, and part of that too, I think, Vic, is storylines we're talking about, and we're going to talk. But you know, that there's part of the yardstick. I don't care what you're drawing. The fans either want the product and they're going to spend their money, and if it's raining, they're going to go. If it's snowing, they're going to, you know, you're still going to do a decent house. If the product isn't pushing the right buttons, then you're not, you know? So, yeah, well, you know, in respect to that, someone had told me that the attendance in Rupp Arena for AEW was around between 5,000 and 6,000 people. That building holds 20,000 people.
It does.
And you know, now we're going to. It's the beginning of the fall of AEW. No, that's not the point. Part of that, excuse me. Part of that, I'm going to say, might be because Cincinnati is less than 100 miles up I-75, and they had just been there how many weeks ago?
Couldn't have been a month. Less than that.
Right. So, and the reason I'm saying that is because I know that people in Cincinnati are not against going to Lexington for concerts or, you know, or for events, basketball, football, whatever. And people from Lexington aren't adverse to coming to Cincinnati for concerts and things like that as well. So what I'm saying is you've got fans that will make the trip one way or the other. And so I'm saying maybe some of those fans in Lexington were in Cincinnati. Now, the Dayton on Wednesday night, it looked, but Nutter Center doesn't hold 20,000 people. I'm not sure what the numbers on Nutter is. I think it's probably closer to 10 in Dayton. And then I saw, and I know this is getting away from where we're going, but I'm just throwing this out, that they're coming back in March to Troy. I'm guessing Hobart Arena. I don't know if there's a better arena.
That is correct.
I promote.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it Hobart?
It is.
There's been wrestling in Hobart since I was 11 years old. That's a fact too. I took the tours for WCW Georgia in there when I was handling those tours in 82 and 83. Anyway, now how are they going to draw there? Well, March, you know, and we're talking about early it wasn't February yet, or was it when they were in Dayton? But anyway, so they may draw well at Troy, but they don't have as big a building to fill either. That's part of it as well. But when you start running those towns that close together, there's going to be some bleed over, and it's going to, you know, a great attendance in one may cost you some money in the other one. So the logistics do come into play is the point I've been trying to make here in the last hour that I've been running my mouth.
Well, we're going to.
But you get my point, right?
I do. We're going to get back to that story with AEW and the House Rules, apparently, tour they're going to be calling it, or maybe just every house show has got that House Rules kind of thing. Kind of like how Dusty would come out every year in Mid-Atlantic and have, he'd call whatever his wrestling schedule was, he'd name it a different kind of tour, where he was going to be.
Right.
But with respect to this Royal Rumble, Les, obviously the three biggest moments, Rhea Ripley winning the Women's Rumble, going wire to wire. Then you've got the Men's Rumble with Cody Rhodes earning his opportunity at the championship, well, both championships in WWE against Roman Reigns. And Gunther lasting almost completely wire to wire as well, another story in there. But, of course, it really was all about the main event. And it isn't to say that the match between Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens wasn't significant or important, but everybody was watching to see what would happen with Sami Zayn. And I'm not sure exactly what I was expecting or if this was going to be the moment, but it was, and man, did they deliver.
Yes, they did. Man, you ain't wrong, brother. That is the best angle, and that's what we called them back in the day, and I'm going to call this with that. I have seen in years the build. Realize this whole Bloodline thing has taken over 2 years. The Sammy thing to get him to this point has taken a year, give or take a few weeks, I guess. But they blew the roof off that damn place. Damn, it was good. I mean, it was old school and everything that it should have been. If you're a wrestling traditionalist like I am, yes, I'll give him a standing ovation. When you hear 51,000 people chanting "fuck you, Roman Reigns," that's wow. And nobody saw. I mean, you knew it was going to be a breakup. We all knew that. But the point was, we didn't know when. I was hoping for something closer to Mania. But the point is, this nobody suspected this, and the way it happened, and then with Jey Uso taking a walk in tears, man, there are so many angles. So many ways they can come out of this and still keep it hot. Sammy and Jay against Jay's brother and Soto. I guess Sammy's going to wrestle Roman, obviously, at some point, but they made Sammy Zayn. Again, I've said it before, I will say it again now, if I have to have a comedic character, a comedic figure, Sami Zayn is the role model for me in every way, shape, or form, because the characterization is not so frigging far over the top that it's unbelievable, because we all know people, the way he was, you know, portraying, you know, hey, I'm a part of this, and, you know, the whole big deal. There's so many ways they go, Vic, and it was just so damn good. I mean, it really was. I popped big time. And if those listening to us haven't seen it yet, find it somewhere and watch it, because it was definitely the best thing that's happened in the past year or longer in this business. Never mind WWE or AEW or Impact or anything else. In this business, that is the strongest angle I have seen in years. Thank you very much.
I was telling you off the air that an interview with Roman Reigns resurfaced on social media after the Rumble, somewhere in the area of 18 plus months ago, where he was raving about how great he thought Sami Zayn was and how happy he would be if there was a way that he could work with Zayn. So you can only imagine now, knowing that and seeing everything that they've been doing over the last year, just how much Roman might have been nudging this along behind the scenes to try and keep this going, especially since this whole thing was really supposed to be set up to just be a few week comedy deal. And one of the little needles Roman planted on him when you, in that show closing angle, and the intensity is building and the camera's close enough to pick up the conversation, how Roman points out, hey man, you owe me. If it wasn't for me, you'd still be wrestling these jackass guys. I got you out of that. So making a reference to where Sammy was before he got with the Bloodline, which makes a lot of sense. And in looking at this, you know, you referenced the match that obviously is going to have to happen. Looks like it's going to be the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view here later this month. It's interesting to note here in the Observer, which is up on the front page at f4wonline.com, that, and something we talked about last week, you know, could you have worked this to WrestleMania? Is it a WrestleMania main event? And would it be going completely sideways for Sami Zayn to actually win this thing? And with that in mind, I'm looking at some of the notes Dave has in the Observer, and he says in the Observer this week that a few people internally admit that they didn't see coming in how hot this would be, and that neither Vince nor Paul Levesque initially green-lighted Zayn at the main event of WrestleMania against Reigns because they didn't see it developing into something that would make him someone who could be legitimately part of a headline match at WrestleMania, but that apparently they both come around to the idea and understand that it could be done, but they've got their plans with Cody and they're going to move forward with that. And that's why they're doing this match in February. Basically they'd made their decision that this wasn't going to make it to that. And so they're going to stick with it. But apparently Paul Levesque or somebody near the top has admitted that they would not be upset if they had to make it a WrestleMania main event. Nevertheless, you get the bonus, however, though, of Sammy, of course, being a native Canadian and having this match at Elimination Chamber in Montreal. So you can imagine what that building's going to be like.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, I could, you know, if you just said 4 or 5 months ago, Sammy and Roman at main event at Mania, I thought, nah, probably not. Yes, after this Rumble, yes, sir, I'd be more than believing that it would, nobody would, you know, would turn away from it. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, if there is a how to build a story 101, man, this is it. And you can take the 2 years it's taken to get to this, or the year with Sammy, the whole thing. It's been beautiful. Yeah, I posted on Facebook and on Twitter. Hats off, a standing ovation to the guys. Even the, who I don't know who's writing behind the scenes. I'm sure Roman has some input. Hopefully Sammy, you know, and the guys involved all have a little input. But those people, the guys, everybody stepped up. And I think with Jay, who was the hardest guy to turn to Sammy's way of thinking or Sammy's side, is the guys walking away. That makes it even better.
Yes.
Yes. because, you know, and yes, if he's stand up for this, absolutely. And you can work brother against brother, although I'm not big on those particular matches. I could see that coming out of this particular split. Sure.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and I'm going to put the question to you again a different way regarding what to do with Jay here. Now that was the thing nobody saw coming, right? Jay deciding that this was a little too much for him and that Sammy had completely won him over, so he wasn't going to be a part of this. You pointed out we could do Sammy and Jay against Jimmy and Solo. I was also thinking that maybe before I got to the point where I'm going to talk to you about, maybe you could actually have a thing where the titles are not stripped or held up of any kind. You make that match. Each Uso comes in with a tag belt, winner take all. One of the other things, though, that I started thinking about is, and this, again, is with Vince McMahon, honestly, I admit, kind of in the back of my mind, and the idea that it's still difficult for me to process the idea that he's not giving any input in creatively at all. If I were Jay, this thing has been so hot and done so well, and I've gotten over so big as being a part of this, I would really be nervous about being the guy who walks away, because I've seen Vince at least too many times do something similar to this, even if it wasn't as successful going into it, and then just forget about me in 3 weeks. Like if they came to me with this and I was Jey Uso, I'd be like, okay, great. So don't tell me what I'm doing at Mania. Tell me where I'm going to be in 6 months.
Yeah, I can see your point on that, and his too, if he were to do that. You mentioned one Uso showing up one belt and the other, and Jimmy with one, Jay with the other, and then what if you put the belts on Jay and Sammy for a while?
Why not?
Yes. And then, I mean, Roman can still do the thing with Sammy as a single. This gives you another story, another layer to it, and that, you know, at some point, then Sammy could even have a single with Jimmy if it came down to that, you know, in the aftermath. But yeah, that's, you know, people on Twitter and Facebook, everybody's, well, they'll do this, they'll do this. And somebody asked my opinion. I said, there's so many layers of this, so many ways they could go with this breakup the way it went. And, you know, so I'm not even guessing at it, but yeah, it was smart. All the way to the very pop, man. Again, I can't say enough good about everybody involved and everybody, you know, behind the scenes that was involved as well. Best angle I've seen in years, and it should be the storyline of 2023. I mean, there may be something come up and get close to it, but I can't picture anything surpassing that the rest of this year. I really can't.
Before we get to Cody and his plans, not just what happened at the Rumble, but the road to WrestleMania here, let's talk briefly about Rhea Ripley winning the Women's Royal Rumble and then coming out of it on Monday night challenging Charlotte Flair. I loved this with all my heart. Not necessarily the Women's Royal Rumble match, but the fact that Rhea won, went wire to wire. I mean, clearly they're sending you a message there on Saturday. And then she comes out Monday and she's got a memory. And she asks us to actually remember something from her first run as champion when the buildings were still empty and she and Charlotte wrestled at WrestleMania for the women's championship. And you thought maybe that was going to be a defining moment for her, but no, Charlotte walked away with the win. And here we are back again a few years later. And it really felt like after that promo, she has to win this thing, doesn't she?
Well, you know what? It won't hurt Charlotte if she does, and it will help her. And it will help, you know, help the faction that she's with to a certain degree. I mean, she's obviously not going to, you know, they're not going to help her defend it or anything. But, I think Charlotte's strong enough to take the hit. She really is, you know, and it will help make Rhea as well. One thing before we get in, and I got to make the comparison of 180 degrees turnaround, and I told you I was going to do this anyway, and the great, 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 great angle I saw on Saturday was only diminished a little bit by the horribly, horrible, horrible comedy skit. And that's all I can call it, is a comedy skit that I saw on Friday night. Yes. If Tony Khan is not embarrassed by what I saw, I'm smart enough to be embarrassed for him. Yeah. And I say that, I'm sincere. the Big Indian, the Giant Indian, and Danhausen. And I said, comedy skit, you can't. Laurel and Hardy, you know, Homer and Jethro, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, I don't care. It was horrible. In the middle of the match, everybody in the match gets out except Danhausen and the big guy, and it's just bad, 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 bad. Please don't tell me it's professional wrestling, because it is anything but. And then the big guy sold for Danhausen. And as I said to you, damn it, I know a lot of bookers would have seen himself or Danhausen and said, where you work after you get done here? Because your ass is gone. I mean, it was bullshit. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I'm saying it. It was bullshit. And like I say, it was embarrassing. If you're in a wrestling business, there's nothing good about it. Nothing good can come of it. So, and just the complete opposite, right? I mean, just totally. And then Saturday, the greatest angle I've seen in years. So talk about from the basement to the top of the mountain. And, wow. Anyway, move on. But I had to get that out of my system. I'm sorry. I did.
You feel better?
No, because my business is under siege.
Well, actually, we're creeping a little bit closer to some AEW talk with some stuff Dax had to say in his most recent podcast and some interesting comments from Samoa Joe in addition to the goings on Dynamite. But let's not make that switch until we've talked about Cody Rhodes winning this Royal Rumble and now on the road to WrestleMania. Obviously, the story is in place. They did a wonderful job with the vignettes. He came in at number 30, was beloved. Everybody was probably cringing with every murderous chop from Gunther, who I would love to see as Cody's challenge, one of Cody's first challengers. Maybe not. Maybe we should make him wait for that. But would love to see him challenge Cody at some point if Cody is, in fact, successful at Mania against Roman. I think that's the direction I would go in with this, wouldn't you?
I think so. Yes, I believe that I would. I believe that I would. And Monday night, Cody's promo was gold. I said to Jim, my friend Jim who watched, I said, if you don't know what's made him and put him where he's at now, you never will. I mean, Cody is a good worker. I mean, he's no Ricky Steamboat. He's not Brad Armstrong, but he's a good worker. But his damn promos are virtually 9 out of 10 times spot on, and is what, you know, gets the job done, you know, and takes him to the next level. And it certainly did that on Monday night. And here we go with the yin and yang and the 180 degrees again. And the guy who was trying to cut a promo with him, poor Dominic.
Well, I think unfortunately he came across pretty badly, but I'm pretty sure, unfortunately for Dom, that was also by design. So I think they actually got what they wanted out of that.
Well, you know, I try not to, but yes, it was Dominic's promo, if you weren't watching, was coming from a man 6'4", 280, hard as a rock, scarred, battle-tested, and was going to kick somebody's ass. Then you opened your eyes. Here stood this sweet-looking young kid, I think playing cowboy, with a bandana tied around his neck. And the promo didn't fit the guy. The guy didn't fit the promo. And like I say, I try not to laugh at anything that's done adversely to the business, but I couldn't help myself. Jim said, oh my God, is he joking? And you made mention that maybe it's done. And if it was, wow, they're not doing the kid any favors. Believe me, they're not. You're trying to make him into a heel with a Sammy personality to a certain degree. Does that make sense?
I do. I get what you're going with that.
Yeah, where he believes he's somebody, he's absolutely not. And he's absolutely not. I don't know if he believes it or not. But maybe you should find a weight room instead of the tailor who makes your bandanas and stuff. Get some meat on them bones, kid, some muscle, so then we actually can believe what you're saying.
I mean, if we're going to go funny with this, then I need him to commit a little further, Les. I don't know why he wears the basic uniform colors of the rest of Judgment Day. Shouldn't they just have him in the orange jumpsuit like nails back in the day. If all he's going to do is talk about his time
that'll
in
work.
Prison.
That'll work. Sure. Sure. That'll work. Good God. No, I know we're jumping all around the place here, but you know what? Cody made mention, you know, that the irony of somebody from his family headlining the biggest event in WWE, you know, normally every year. And he's right, in a way, right? I mean, Dusty battled Vince when he was with the WCW and the NWA. Cody jumped ship and actually helped bring AEW to prominence. And as he said, I did everything I could, right, to hurt him.
Yeah.
But, there's some to be, you know, it's like, what's his name that tore his jersey off at the Buccaneers and walked off.
Antonio Brown.
Yeah. Here's a guy who's so super talented, and everybody kept giving him a chance because of that, and now nobody's giving him a chance. So, yeah, I see it, a lot in that same, you know, put it in that same vein to a certain degree. But, I thought when, and Cody to make mention, and you know, the business has changed so much because for him to be able to say that, nobody said, you can't talk, don't talk, don't remind him that you were an aide.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's, but I wanted to bring that up because I agree with him. It is irony without question.
Well, coming up, Dax drops another little breadcrumb that has you leaning in the direction of FTR not coming back to WWE. We'll talk about that in a second. But Les, you had the occasion recently, and I would love for you to mention it again. First of all, I'm a bad host because somehow last weekend got away from me, and I did not watch you with Briscoe and Bradshaw, but I'll have the chance to do that this weekend. I referenced that only because you and Briscoe were in business together, and now would be a good time to talk about T-shirts and such.
Yeah, and you know, on the Briscoe and Bradshaw podcast, we get into depth, you know, how we started that and why it didn't, you know, about what how well it was going and growing and so forth, and why we didn't continue it on. But yes, you can get a copy of the first ever pro wrestling T-shirt ever on the market, and that was the Briscoe Booster Tee, which was the brainchild of myself, Jack and Jerry Briscoe, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And we put that out in 1972. And you can get a copy of that at Pro Wrestling Tees. And also get an I'm a Les Thatcher Guy T-shirt there if you happen to be one. But, yeah, and catch us with me with Briscoe and Bradshaw, stories with Briscoe and Bradshaw. We do almost 2 hours, and it was so much fun.
So Dax has got himself a podcast that we've spent a lot of time talking about in the last few weeks since he's launched it. With good reason. He said a lot of things that were worth discussing on this and just about any program dedicated to professional wrestling, especially when you're talking about one of the best tag teams of this generation, maybe the best tag team in FTR. This week, I sent you a clip from Dax's podcast talking about his time at NXT with Cash as the Revival, talking about how I think this might come as a surprise to some people if you weren't really up on it, and Dax gives you some of the inside scoop, that the Revival were never really Paul Levesque's go-to guys, in a manner of speaking. Doesn't mean he didn't think they were terrific. Doesn't mean he didn't trust them in the ring, not only to get themselves over, but to do what was right for everyone in the long term. But apparently, they were not necessarily high on Paul Levesque's check-in with and see how you're doing list. As Dax tells the story, both he and Ciampa were banged up around the same time. Ciampa was banged up, and Dax had his knee scoped. And he gets a text from Ciampa saying, hey, did Paul, you know, did you get in touch with Paul? Did he talk to you? And then Dax is like, no, what are you talking about? He said, oh, well, you know, he texted me, checked in on me, see how I was doing. Dax is like, I don't even have that guy's number. What are you talking about?
Wow.
So apparently, you know, and he's not saying this with a tinge of jealousy, what I'm about to say. But it
right.
was just that he noted that clearly Ciampa and Gargano were Triple H's guys, meaning they were people he believed in and
right.
from the outset and were really into them. And I think you can see the way that came through in getting them to the main roster when things were basically done for them in NXT. He's looked out for them as best he could. But, you know, if you remember what happened with the Revival at first, remember they were the Mechanics, and they'd come out in these Mechanic t-shirts. I mean, button-down shirts. So it's not like there was a whole lot of thought put into the idea that those guys were going to be stars.
Right, right. No, you're absolutely right. Although, to me, the name that they named the team, Revival, right? Okay, I'm going to... And you know what? Them and Gable and his partner, damn it.
Otis.
No. The young guy.
Jordan.
Jordan, yeah. Boy, they had some great matches.
Yes, they did.
The Revival against Jordan and Gable. Yes, sir. They had some tremendous matches. But, yeah, but you know, that happens. And I've said that on this show. We've talked about it. It's subjective, you know. The shame of it is, it's not like, you know, Joe Burrow's is going to quarterback the Bengals until he falls apart, as long as he's healthy, because he's that good and he's going to get a lot of money for it. You know, you can be that good in the wrestling business and not get a lot of money for it because somebody doesn't see you in that light. And somebody else can't. That's, you know, in the territories, that was, it wasn't uncommon to be able to work on top in one territory and be mid-card in another. You know, or just a preliminary guy. It just depended what the booker needed, what the booker and the promoter actually saw when you walked in the door, you know, and sometimes their eyes didn't see the same thing. But yeah, that's, it's not uncommon. And if it's that way, there's not a hell of a lot you can do with it. You know, back in the day, you could change territories. You weren't under a contract of any kind. You know, except for a handshake or a verbal commitment. And, of course, the guys today cannot do that. And they are not independent contractors, regardless of what. They're anything but. They're indentured servants, if they're anything.
For sure. So, I think there's just an impression out there. Because I think for some talents, it's true, and I think the people can see that, is that Triple H has invested a lot in a lot of these kids and have been with them since, if not the start of their careers, the start of their journeys in NXT, and has a lot of personal capital, if you will, invested in them, not only from a business standpoint, but because he was there at their starts, he feels some kind of way. And I think a lot of people thought that because the Revival were so important in NXT or worked their way into that spot, that maybe that they were a couple of those favorite sons, and Dax threw a little cold water on that, which I don't know that that was necessarily by design, but it read to me like just another little hint, like, don't expect this to be easy for us to go back.
Well, and you know that there's times that you can see a guy their first time and you don't see anything, and you see, you know, and then they're out of sight for a while. You heard different things, but you haven't seen them. And then a year or 2 years later, you get a look at, wow, man, that, you know, that person is improved. So that can change too. But if Paul Levesque is not an idiot, and if he hasn't seen what these guys have done over there and what they're capable of doing, then it's personal. That's all I can say, because if he has the opportunity to sign them, oh man, come on. Truthfully, that's, turn them loose along with Carl Anderson and his partner, and they can have some tremendous matches. There's other teams there that, you know, it's a shame. I don't know if Randy Orton will ever be back, and I hate to think that he won't be. But, you know, he and Riddle against those guys would have been there's those guys are that good, you know, Cash and Dax are. And so they're going to land on their feet whatever happens. And the way they're talking, they're smart enough to, you know, to wind it down before their bodies are broken and ruined completely. So, more power to them. You know, they have earned my respect for sure, and I know yours as well.
Oh, without question. While we are in the midst of our weekly podcast reviews, let's get into what Samoa Joe said the other day when he had the opportunity to sit in with Renee Paquette on an edition of The Sessions. You know, Joe's been around long enough that he probably doesn't take too much personally anymore, because you understand that it's just business at this point. It is what it is. And you worry about the things that you can control and very little of anything else. But he was talking with Renee about some of that back and forth near the end of his tenure in WWE. I mean, getting cut, then coming back in NXT a couple of months later, but well, being cut without Paul Levesque actually even finding out about it until after it had happened, and then getting cut a second time not too long after he had won the NXT championship. And he mentioned that this information is unconfirmed, it's secondhand, but he says he has it on good authority from those directly involved. Make of that what you will. He said there were issues between the two upper echelons of management, and they were playing out their war with the careers and the contracts of the people underneath them. I reference this only because we just spent some time earlier in this podcast talking about Vince McMahon, who was allegedly only back at Titan Tower working on a sale, and how hard it is for us to believe that that's all he's working on. And you see this story, and it's like, you know, it wasn't all that long ago. So who is this war between? I mean, it's not hard to imagine we're talking about Vince and Paul Levesque, or maybe Vince with Bruce Pritchard in his ear and Paul Levesque. So what's really going on here if there was a war between these two upper echelons? And Mr. Levesque, understandably, is on the conference call this week talking about how great it is to have his father-in-law back in business.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Of course, there are going to be disagreements. I've seen, you know, Booker's going to, when Bill Watts and Leo Garibaldi, when I was lucky enough to sit with both these guys in the Atlanta office during the war, you know, in 73 and part of 74, they didn't agree all the time, but they agreed we're going to be Gunkel Promotions, right? And so much to learn, but they always came, you know, okay, here's my idea, here's Bill's idea, et cetera, we'll, you know, work it out. And they did, you know, for the benefit of the company. And that's, you know, and well, I'm going to fire that guy because you're pissed me off. Okay. That makes not a lot of, my mother used to say, you're cutting your nose off to spite your face. And that's, with Joe, I was surprised the second time. Where the hell did he go?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. I think, well, I mean, I'm pretty sure if I recall right, the speculation at the time was the loss of the Wednesday Night War incurred casualties. And allegedly, Vince was none too pleased with the son-in-law for losing this battle with AEW. And he went out and scanned the roster and said, each one of these guys that you think are your guys got to go because they didn't win.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So where do we go from here, right? I mean, both companies. I mean, we know, we know where WWE is going for sure. I mean, you know, what's headed toward WrestleMania. We don't know the full, but we know at some point, Sammy, Roman, and Cody obviously is involved, but we'll see, you know, where that goes. But AEW is, their numbers are, I mean, the fact that they're drawing 900,000 people, I don't think anybody should be upset about. I mean, mad, right? You know, but they have stayed down. But then a lot of that is, I think, I don't know. You know, it comes back to you give me something good and then you take that away and give me something that I don't want to see. You know, it's just like the Danhausen and the Big Indian. I you know, I'm not going back into that again, but that was as useless tits on a boar hog. I don't know how to say it. I mean, somebody laughed at it, but it was unnecessary, and it did nothing to get the people. They're supposed to be tough guys over, not clowns.
Here's the thing I can't put my finger on, Les. When I looked at the lineups for the previous 3 or 4 weeks, I had been unimpressed with the lineups on Dynamite. Obviously, there's an exception last week with Jay Lethal and Mark Briscoe. You understand there's going to be a lot of emotion and a lot of eyeballs going on to that particular show. But the previous shows, I looked at those lineups and I'd actually told somebody, this could be a sub 900,000 viewer show. And they did much better with those shows than I thought they would. I looked at that lineup before the show Wednesday and thought, this looks like a really good show. And then you see this number, 901, obviously down from the week before, but you didn't expect them to repeat that business. But I'm looking at the previous weeks where I thought, this lineup is trash, comparatively speaking to what we saw this past week. And yet those shows vastly outperformed this one, and I'm at a loss to explain it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Wednesday night, you know, they opened with Moxley and Cowboy Page. And, you know, it was, I think, what you expected, you know, a battle. I didn't expect to see solid wrestling. These guys are going to beat the hell out of each other. And it started, actually started outside the ring and worked her way into it at some point. And, you know, that was, you expected that to be, you know, solid and a fight. I enjoyed watching Tim Thatcher and Bryan Danielson because I enjoy watching wrestling. And they added more wrestling than anybody else on the show. And as far as the rest of that show, it was a show. I mean, the women's match was exactly as, you know, mediocre as I expected it to be. And they're just, again, you know, they try to throw so many things together at once. And some, well, like we talked about Wardlow, who was running out, beats the hell out of Joe. We hadn't seen Wardlow in how many weeks? There's no consistency. And you need... You can only tell us that you're giving us like little flash sequences instead of a complete story. And again, let's go back to Roman and Sammy and that whole thing. If you go back, you can piece a story together going back how many months?
Oh God, a year, almost.
Yeah. And you have a, when I say consistent, I'm not saying that, well, they move from A to B to C to D. Not exactly. They may have jumped around, but the story, you know, made sense. And so much of this stuff doesn't make sense on Ring of Honor. I mean, on AEW. It just doesn't. I mean, I'm not saying that it's bad, good, or indifferent. It just, it makes no sense. So you can't get the people to hook into it. And that's the key. Is to, you know, I've mentioned about Raquel Rodriguez for several times over the last couple of months. And the thing that excites me so much about her is you can feel her passion and her desire to be on top. And when she makes a comeback, she sets herself on fire, basically. I hate that they may use her as a heel because she's so good as a babyface, believe me. But that's, I don't see that in so much of this. It's just too many of the acrobat, you know, stunt sequences are going, they're stunt sequences. And there's not a lot of passion or emotion into that. And if that's what you're, you know, if that's what you want and you want to pay $100 for a seat to watch it, or that's what you want to watch every Wednesday and Friday night, that's good. But it's not good wrestling storytelling is what it isn't, whether you like it or you don't, you know. And again, if you compare it with the Bloodline stuff, it doesn't match up. It just doesn't. Do you think?
No, and I want to nitpick something if I can. Speaking of folks who have learned from the legend Les Thatcher and this show on a weekly basis, can I nitpick something that I can't say it didn't work, but it still annoyed me about sure. Moxley and Page, more specifically the aftermath of the match, not the match itself. On Wednesday, when they're exchanging near the finishing sequence and Page actually gets Moxley in his own bulldog choke, and Moxley smartly turns it into a cradle of some kind and gets the flash pin. And the announcers basically talk about how Moxley was fortunate to escape and how Page might have actually been the better man that night. And I was bothered by that. I don't think that it shouldn't have been said. It just shouldn't have been them who said it. I mean, these yeah. guys should have been sitting there saying, hey, doesn't matter how you won. It matters if you won. Mox got here. He beat a former champion in Page 2 out of 3. This has got to put him in line for the winner of MJF and Bryan Danielson. This is a big win for a former champion over another champion. And yeah. then a couple of segments later, since we've been doing this for the last few weeks, Renee's in the locker room with Page. And Page is the one who says, listen, you got your hand, you got it done tonight. I can't deny it. You got your hand raised. Congratulations to you. But are you really happy with a win like that? I mean, let's be real. You know, you're the guy who goes to war every week. You're this alpha male. And is a cradle really going to help you sleep at night? Honestly? You know, is it start needling him like that to get himself right. another match with Moxley? And he starts questioning whether Moxley is comfortable with taking that as an actual win and needling Moxley and, you know, attacking his manhood sure. on some level, right? And then yeah, you come back absolutely. And you've got the veteran Taz, who personality-wise in his day was not all that different from Jon Moxley. and have Taz say, you know what? I know I said a win is a win out here, but, you know, I don't know Moxley very well, but he and I are not all that dissimilar in approach in my day. And I got to be honest with you. If an opponent I had just beat said something like that about me, I'd probably want to get him back in the ring and do it that way.
Well, you know what? Again, it, one of the things I keep going back to Aldis and Cody in the Chicago show for the NWA title and how that match was over before the bell rang to start it because of their great professional and honest promos. They weren't yelling. They weren't screaming. They were talking about actual ways to beat a guy as a wrestler, not to steal anything from him or not, you know, I mean, and that's, everybody's so intent on yelling and cutting the other, you know, nobody actually, you know, and with these guys, especially the guys on top, I mean, I said to Jim when Tim Thatcher and Danielson came out, I said, I hope they're going to wrestle. They both can. But in this environment, I'm not sure how much I'm going to see. Well, I saw more than I expected, to be honest with you. But I could have lived without the three or four, let's throw 9,000 punches, forearms, or chops. Pick your pick. It's multiple choice. You know, because that's done in every match now, too. So, but anyway, yeah. So, yes, it comes down to, well, you know, I heard Terry Funk saying to a young kid one time, and if you get right down, when I talk about details, Terry said to this guy, you're a baby face. So if you're promoing another baby face, you can use his first name because it's all right. It's going to be a baby face match, and it's two baby faces. You can, you know, if you're talking about Bill, I can, you know, blah, blah, blah. If Bill's a heel and you're a baby face, then it's, if his last name is Jones, it's Jones, I got you. Now, most people don't stop to think about things like that, do they?
No.
But it's a subconscious thing that touches the audience, and that's where Cody Rhodes is so damn good at picking the right words and the right phrasings and the timing on his promos. And these guys could, you know, listen, Adam Page, we've already talked about, when nobody knew who he was, I used him in a tournament in L.A. because I saw a future for this kid, and I still see a future. But one thing, if I were, why are you always look sourpuss? Why are you always mad? Why? No reason that I'm aware of. You ever see him smile? There's got to be a multitude of emotions in this business. You can't just be, it's like, I don't want to hear every promo with a heel screaming, you know? I don't. Again, going back to Aldis and Cody, professionals, athletes, you can sell that. You may think that people have to see dives and somersaults and all that. They don't. Not if you know how to tell the story properly.
A couple more things here, because I realize that we're actually very short on time here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, but there are a couple more things I definitely want to make sure that we at least mention before we wrap this. So let's get into this as quickly as we can here. Tony Khan talking about the idea of an AEW streaming service. And of course, I started thinking about Honor Club since they've revived that here with Ring of Honor not getting a television deal. And my first thought, obviously, is why don't you fold Honor Club into AEW as opposed to having two different streaming services? But it's just something that I thought was worth mentioning because it involves expanding their partnership with Warner Brothers Discovery when there's really only an option year left on the television deal. And if Discovery was to sign off on something like this and go into business with them on a streaming service, I would think that would be pretty good. It would portend really well for AEW in the next television contract.
Yeah, you're absolutely, I agree with you. I agree with you. And, you know, opposed to being so intent, Tony Khan, on expanding continually, try to be focused on refining your product and then worry more about expansion. Does that make sense?
It does. But we're on the expansion kick here, which is why we're going to circle back around to something you mentioned a little while ago about AEW's first house show tour, coming in March. Talked about the fact that it's in Troy, Ohio, Hobart Arena, that very first show on March 18th. To answer a couple of things you brought up earlier, the Nutter Center in Dayton holds 10,400. Hobart Arena, a shade under 3,800. And I think that's really, for these house shows for AEW moving forward, that's like the sweet spot, at least at this particular point in time.
Yes.
Try and find those 5,000 and under buildings to work these house shows at. Because that's really where they can actually go and go to a bunch of places they haven't been to on television before. And those get those first time in bumps too.
Yes. And in those house shows, take some of these kids that need experience to work with the veterans and give them the 20 minute matches in the house shows, not on television.
Yes.
And it's a great, and like Jade Cargill, if she's on these house show tours, she should be doing long matches, not too long, but longer matches with top women. Even if she gets beat, it's not on TV. And, so those house tours can be a very good learning tool for the younger guys as well.
Be interested to see what kind of schedule they have put together, because you don't put this out without already having a whole bunch of other shows lined up. This is just the only one that they've announced. For
right.
March 18th, which is a Saturday, are they going to go all in on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday when they don't have live rampages? Are they just doing Saturday nights? Are they going Saturday and Sunday? How's that going to work out? How much more often are these guys going to work? Because remember, one of the selling points initially, the many selling points of AEW, was you work one time a week.
Sure. But then when you've got so many people, how do you keep them all busy and rationalize paying them all this money if you don't keep them busy?
Agreed.
That is a problem that promoters are going to, every promoter's had at some point in time, right? You got all these guys that need to be paid, and now how do we pay them? We pay them by booking them on shows, and that's the house show tours. Yeah, they are, I think, beneficial, especially to the younger guys. And it should show some marked improvement.
Well, we can say this about AEW's house shows with respect to their roster. You can definitely mix and match to your heart's delight. Nobody ever has to work two weekends in a row.
No, that's for sure. That is for sure. You got more talent than talent's got. So
yeah, that is a fact. Hey, Kota Ibushi is now on the free agent market, Les. He was wished well in his future endeavors. How dare they? By New Japan Pro Wrestling at the end of January. It wasn't a firing or anything. His contract expired. And anybody who follows New Japan is well aware. If you're not, this is only an hour-long program and we're already late, so I can't get into everything that's happened with Ibushi and management there in New Japan Pro Wrestling. But things went sour sometime in the last 12, 18 months or so. So he's got eyes on opening up his a wrestling school of his own, but is open to talking to just about anybody who wants to do business with him. Obviously, AEW is a logical landing place, at least for occasional appearances, since Kenny Omega is there. But he did do that Cruiserweight tournament years ago in NXT, and he is a free agent, and Paul Levesque has shown a willingness to use people, even if it's not with a great deal of regularity, for particular events or special occasions. Do you think, even though he was reluctant to come to this country for any length of time, with WWE, that he might be willing to revisit that idea at this point?
I think he might be willing to revisit it. Myself, as Tony Khan or Paul Levesque or anybody else, he's been on the shelf for over a year now, right?
For the most part. He's come back and done a few dates, but yeah,
okay.
the amount of matches he's had in the last 18 months, not many.
I haven't seen, but if I were a promoter / booker, writer, whatever, I'd want to see before I made too big an offer anyway. I'd want to see how, I'd want to take a physical and see him work in the ring. I know his track record, but, he's been off. And obviously he hasn't been back on a full schedule, and there's a reason for that too. Again, I'm just looking at it as a booker or a promoter.
I understand what you're saying, and maybe this is unfair of me to say, but you can't tell me that I'm the only one thinking this. Will Tony actually do that kind of due diligence given Ibushi's relationship with Kenny Omega? Or will Kenny just walk in and say, sight unseen, you don't need to know, he's healthy, I'll take my word for it?
I would say that Tony might be the guy who's going to take the word for it. Me being an old beat-up warrior myself, I'm not. So I'm from Missouri, you got to show me. So
By the way, in terms of free agents, and I have no idea whether this is an angle or anything else, but Jay White's been making some noises about a contract expiring sometime in the relatively near future. So that just could be an angle, since New Japan does do a good amount of business with AEW, but it's worth keeping your eye on nevertheless, because if there's any truth to that, I would imagine Paul Levesque would be ready to swoop in.
Paul might be interested, but I would say Tony, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, yes. Tony Khan is the home for lost wrestlers. Oh, Lordy.
We are winding down this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Before we go, however, you have not yet had the opportunity, my friend, to let everybody know where you will be available for booking weekend seminars, training camps, talking about those terrific HWA DVDs. By the way, on cold days like this, are you still taking bookings? Like, if the weekend turns out to be like -7, are you canceling the plane ticket? Or are you showing up with sled dogs?
The way the plane schedules are, you flip a coin to see if your plane's going to leave, right?
That is true. Yeah, the way it's been lately.
Yeah. No, if you're interested in booking me for a seminar or weekend training camp or appearance of any sort, podcast, et cetera, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com, and I'd be more than happy to send you out the information about what we do at these camps and my costs and so forth and so on. And as far as tapes, Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental tapes, volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content. Both are 2 DVD sets, matches, interviews, and extras covered by myself and Joe Dombrowski doing the voiceovers. You can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And Joe tells me he's going to have volume 3 ready to go around WrestleMania time at those same addresses, as obviously. And then the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology, the 20th anniversary, 4 DVDs in the set, over 15 hours of content from those great shows of 98, 99, 2000, and 2001 with WCW, WWE, WWF, whatever, and ECW guys all on the same card on the same night. Matches, interviews, awards, extras. PillmanShows.com are the two addresses I mentioned earlier, with the wind coming in over my shoulder. Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com.
Brother, on the East Coast, the Hawk is out.
The Hawk is out.
Yes, that wind, it is rattling, it is whistling. There are below zero temperatures all up and down the eastern seaboard this weekend, Les, including, now we go way up north near Canada. There are a couple of towns in Maine that are supposed to be minus 30 this weekend.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's 31 here this morning, but not minus.
No.
Thank goodness. No. Thank goodness.
If you're in one of those spots, please do everything you can to stay warm and let some of that stuff keep running, because, you know, if you shut something off, it may not come back on.
There you go.
For the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we are looking forward to talking to you again next week, especially to find out what's happening with Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn.